CF United, a premier cold fusion conference by TerraTech Programming. Created by developers for developers.
Good afternoon, everybody. Can everybody hear me okay? I'll take that as a yes. I don't know. Before I begin, I've been asked to make a few announcements. The first announcement is that parking is free for the next 2 days. Presumably this means parking in the conference center lot. I don't know anything more than parking is free. It's kind of a shame because I just paid $7 to park, but oh well. Second announcement, the Cold Spring Birds of a Feather is in Ballroom E, so presumably that's afterwards tonight. I don't know how many people are interested in Cold Spring, but it's pretty neat, an inversion of control mechanism for cold fusion applications. Anyway, those are the announcements I'm supposed to make. Okay, without further ado, let's go ahead and get started. My name is Dave Watts. I'm the CTO of Fig Leaf Software, and today I'm going to talk about Cold Fusion server configuration and troubleshooting. Now, Cold Fusion 7, or rather Cold Fusion MX 6 and higher, it's been out for a while now, and most of us have probably already migrated to it. Quick show of hands, how many people are still running apps on Cold Fusion 5 or earlier? Okay. This reminds me of that book series, Left Behind, for some reason. Anyway, moving from Cold Fusion 5 to MX was a bit of a problem for a lot of people because the platforms are so significantly different. I'm going to touch on that a little bit, but for most of us, we've already moved to CFMX 6 or higher, so we're beyond all that. The big difference between CF5 and earlier, and CF6 and later, the addition of the Java platform means that basically there's a lot more to know to have your Cold Fusion server run optimally. There are a lot more tunable parameters than there were with Cold Fusion 5. With Cold Fusion 5, you pretty much installed it on the box. There were about 5 or 6 settings you could make, and if you wrote adequate code, everything would work, and if you didn't, it wouldn't work. With Cold Fusion 6 and higher, with the Java platform, there are many, many more things that come into play. So what we're going to cover in today's presentation is, very briefly, because we only have about 45 minutes or so, we're going to cover a little bit about CF5 versus MX and newer versions. We're going to talk about configuration options. A lot of the advantages that the Java platform bring to us, most of us just aren't using. So we're going to talk about some of those advantages. We're going to talk about single server versus multi-server configuration. And we're going to take a look at pertinent Cold Fusion administrator settings. We're also going to spend a decent amount of time talking about the Java virtual machine, which is the engine that makes Cold Fusion go. Of course, with Cold Fusion 5, we didn't have to worry about that. With Cold Fusion 6 and higher, big deal. We have to know a little bit, at least, about configuring, changing the Java virtual machine. We're going to talk about database connectivity settings and some options that we have to play around there. And we'll talk a little bit about, well, once we've got all this stuff set up, what do we do when problems arise? We're going to talk a little bit about monitoring, a little bit about server metrics, a little bit about looking at our code and identifying code-based issues. And I'm going to wrap this up with a little bit of discussion of third-party tools. I'm not going to demonstrate those tools because they're actually being demonstrated right here at the show by their vendors, but I am going to talk about them a little bit. Now, one big problem that a lot of people ran into when they moved from CF5 is they would take a working CF5 application on a working server, and they would deploy it on a similarly sized server with CFMX, and it wouldn't work. It would fail. In some cases, it would fail catastrophically. Code that works adequately in CF5 may fail under load with CF6 and higher. CFMX tends to be a little more particular about the code that you run. So some things that we kind of could get away with in CF5, especially when it comes to memory management, those things don't really work as well in CF6 and higher, CF6 and 7. The big thing that you always have to do, if possible, is make sure that your applications work before you move production. And for previous versions of CF, this wasn't really that big a deal because, for the most part, CF4 worked as well as or better than CF3, and CF5 worked as well as or better than CF4. In general, that's true with CF6 and higher as well, but there are enough differences in how it does things that you can't, with any safety, take a CF5 application, put it on a CFMX server, and expect everything to work. There are a lot of things that might come up in that application that are going to be very specific to your environment. The biggest single problem, in my experience, with CF6 and higher applications and server environments is memory usage and memory management. Of course, when we're building web applications, we typically have kind of a golden rule of web applications, which is we want the web application to do as little work at runtime as possible. So a good web application developer typically takes heavy advantage of caching, caching database queries, caching generated output, anything that they can do to avoid actually doing work when a page is run. Now, in CF5, that was always, without question, a very viable and useful approach. With CF6 and higher, it is as well, with the caveat that we have to be more concerned about memory usage. We have to keep a closer eye on memory usage. So with CF5, native application on Windows or Linux or what have you, you didn't really have any memory management limitations as you do with CFMX. Now, when we install ColdFusion MX right off of the bat, we have some different options. And most of those options are wrapped up in the enterprise version of MX. If you're using MX and you're using enterprise, you'll be able to use all the things I'm talking about. If you're on standard, you're going to be a lot more limited about what you can do. One of the biggest things that we can do to improve performance with MX, 6 or 7, is to run it in the multi-server option, where we actually install a full copy of JRun, and we install as many instances of ColdFusion as the server can support. This allows us to work around some of the memory management limitations inherent to the Java platform. If you have enterprise, you can deploy ColdFusion on other J2E app servers as well. Now, typically, either you're already doing that or you're not, and if you are using, for example, WebSphere or WebLogic, that might be a motivating factor in your purchasing enterprise, so you can deploy it on your existing app server. For most of us who are just running regular old ColdFusion applications, that's not a big deal. And if you buy enterprise, you might as well just go ahead and use JRun, again, unless you've already made some kind of commitment as far as an organization-wide application server of some sort. And the third option that we get with enterprise that we don't get with standard is enterprise comes with Type 4 JDBC drivers for Oracle. Standard does not. So if you're using standard, or rather if you're using ColdFusion, and you plan to talk to an Oracle server, the vast majority of you, enterprise will be well worth the extra $3,000 or $4,000 because it will work, and standard will not work especially well. Now, when we install ColdFusion in multi-server mode, we can actually install multiple copies of ColdFusion, each with its own copy of JRun, its own instance of JRun, each with its own separate memory space. This buys us a couple of different things. One is that it allows us to work around the inherent limitations of the JVM, especially on Windows. How many people in here are running their web apps on Windows? Quick show of hands. Okay, well, that's most of you. Well, did you know on Windows that the JVM is basically maxed out at somewhere between 1 and 1.5 gigs of RAM? Somewhere within there. Well, basically what this means is that if you have applications that take, you know, very heavy advantage of caching, sticking all kinds of record sets, especially in the session scope, you can run into memory management issues as you get closer and closer to that maximum heap size. So one way around that, if you have enterprise, is actually to install multiple copies of ColdFusion on the same server. Nowadays you can get really beefy Windows servers that have, you know, upwards of 8 gigs of RAM. One of those servers can comfortably support 3 or 4 instances. Each of those instances can support part or all of an application. So you might actually have separate applications tied to separate instances, each one with its own memory space. Another quick show of hands, how many people here are running Enterprise? Okay, how many people here are running multiple instances with Enterprise? Okay, a decent number. Right out of the box, that's probably the best value proposition that Enterprise has, is the ability to run multiple servers.
Do you consider clustered servers multiple instances?
Well, clustered physical servers is actually multiple boxes. And of course, if you can afford to buy multiple boxes, that's always a good thing to be able to scale out. But the specific issue, which I'm more concerned about right here, is that you might go out and you might buy an off-the-shelf Dell PowerEdge server that comes with 4 to 8 gigs of RAM, and your Cold Fusion applications by default with a single instance will not be able to take advantage of all that RAM because the maximum heap size is going to be somewhat south of 1.5 gigs. So you might have a server that could conceivably do a lot more for you, and you're just not taking advantage of that. And that's really the value proposition of running multiple instances. Now, when you do, I'm sorry, go ahead. Well, you can run versions of Windows with more than that amount of RAM. You can run data center. Are you talking about the operating system itself? With a 1.4 JVM? Well, that's actually very cool, and I wasn't aware of that. Where can I get more information about that? Would you like come on up and do the presentation? Just kidding. But no, this sounds useful. So let me. Oops. And what I'll do is I'll incorporate that into the online presentation. So thank you very much for that. Now, for the rest of us who didn't know about that, most of us have been running Cold Fusion, and we're, again, kind of stuck with that 1.5 gig RAM footprint. I haven't tried running that configuration, obviously, since I just learned about it, but I still might be a little leery of it. I'd have to test it out a little bit first, so your mileage may vary with that. But if you do have Enterprise, you can still get a lot of value out of segmenting your applications. So you might have an application where you know you're going to be doing more aggressive in-memory caching. You can run that with a separate instance. You can have instances clustered together on a single box, or you can have instances assigned to single applications by setting their context root. Fortunately, all that information is in the Cold Fusion documentation about how to set it up, so you shouldn't have any problems with that. But that should be one of the things that you should be thinking of to improve your baseline performance. Multiple instances, to me, that's the biggest single value proposition of Enterprise. Now, when you install Cold Fusion, it has a bunch of default settings. And what I'd like to do is spend a few minutes talking about those default settings before I go on. So I'm going to switch back and forth between PowerPoint here and my CF administrator. First of all, on the settings page itself, the very first page you get to in the CF administrator, the very first option, the maximum number of simultaneous requests, by default on new installs of Cold Fusion 7, that's set to 25. Now, in my experience, there is no good algorithm for figuring out what this value should be. So basically, what I use to figure it out is one of two methods. The ideal method is to use load testing, performance analysis load testing, to find out where the sweet spot is on your server. In my experience, that is the single most valuable tunable parameter, setting the appropriate value for that. It is almost never turned out to actually be the value that it starts with. And you typically get a lot of performance difference. So I would recommend, if possible, that you try load testing your application server, again, before you go live, pre-production. How many people in here do load testing of their apps? Okay, well, George does. I know George does, but that's not a whole lot of people raising their hands. How come you don't, actually? Let me go ahead and just throw that question out there and raise your hands and tell me why you don't. Yes?
We're just beginning to do load testing and work for the university. And mm-hmm. We can't afford the load testing programs. And we're not. The department's not accepting of the open source load testing yet.
Really? Yeah, that's kind of odd, because there are actually quite a few marginally decent load testing tools out there that are free or cheap. What I typically use when I don't have any money to actually use a real expensive load testing tool is a product called OpenSTA, which is open source. It runs on Windows only, but even if you're deploying against a Unix server, you would do your testing from Windows workstations. That works pretty well for this particular purpose. It's very good for performance analysis load testing, because it allows you to generate load pretty easily, and you don't really have to worry too much about the metrics that it returns. OpenSTA returns very rough metrics compared to a tool like Silk Performer or Mercury Load Runner, but those tools, as the nice lady in the audience pointed out, are very, very expensive, and OpenSTA is free. So I'd recommend that you take a look at that, OpenSTA.org. It's a free download. Actually, I think it's OpenSTA.com. It's one of those two. OpenSTA dot something. You type that in, and you'll find it. Did you have a question about that, or okay? So that parameter again, that's the single biggest payoff as far as tunable parameters, figuring out the appropriate value for that. Previously, per processor, I don't think that is true anymore, although that's what their documentation still says in the few places they mention it. I've generally found that the results can be all over the map, and they're very application dependent.
Yeah, so internal QA testing on standardized applications that have been used for different versions of ColdFusion over the years, that continues to show success at about that same ratio of 3 to 4.
3 to 4 per processor still? Yeah, and you know, I think that the problem with that is that no matter how hard you guys try, I believe that's Steve Arat from Adobe, right? Again, I can barely see that far back. The problem that I found with that is that the applications that people actually have tend to be just all over the map in what they do. So there's a lot of payoff involved in tuning your applications on your server, because they're going to vary from the QA suite that Adobe uses. So it's good to know that that's still the official recommendation. Now, the second setting on the settings page that I found has a big payoff is setting requests to timeout. By default, this is disabled in CF7, so you have to actually go in and enable it, and you can set how many seconds you want to have requests run. This should be enabled. It's disabled by default, but you should always go in and enable it. You don't want requests to basically monopolize the server. So if a request isn't going to be processed in a certain amount of time, you don't want it to run infinitely. Basically, that's what this switch lets you do. It lets you turn that off. Now, typically, when people leave that disabled, their rationale is, well, hey, I know I've got some long-running reports or something like that. They're going to run, they're going to take, it might take an hour for it to run, so I don't want things to time out. But you can exempt those from this this requirement on a per-page basis by using the CF setting tag. CF setting tag allows you to set a timeout value that's significantly higher than the default that's set in the CF administrator. And generally, 30 to 60 seconds is an acceptable range. So if I go into the CF administrator, the settings I'm talking about right now are right on the very first page under server settings page. Maximum number of simultaneous requests. the timeout request after some number of seconds. And you'll notice mine is set to the default because I just reinstalled it just for fun, and that's what I got. Now, the rest of the settings on this settings page generally are not going to be that important to overall server performance, although if you're doing a lot of file uploads, you'll definitely want to take a look at the new features in CF7 to limit the maximum size of post data and to specify the request throttle memory. So that's new in 7. Basically, it keeps a single request from uploading a file that's too large for you to process anyway, which would cause the JVM to keel over after the upload had finished. Well, there's a checkbox. Yes, that's a good question. There's a checkbox in front. If I don't have that checkbox checked, the entire timeout feature is disabled, whether or not I've got a value set in here. And I'm just, right now I'm showing you the default settings. I haven't changed them on this install. So what I would want to do is I'd want to go in here and typically change this to 30 is where I would typically start off. Now, again, you're going to have to know in your environment how long requests generally run. But we want to push towards the shorter end here, because if it takes longer than 30 seconds, we have to ask, is the user really realistically going to wait that long? Are they going to just move on and do something else anyway? Do we want to give that request more time to fail? So again, a certain amount of knowledge of your environment is necessary to get the most out of that. Well, I'll be honest with you. I haven't been working with anybody who's been using reporting that heavily that it's been a problem. Presumably, if you were using if you were using the report builder quite a bit, well, first of all, there's a big difference between standard and enterprise here. And if you are using report builder, enterprise is, again, probably a better value proposition because it allows you to have multiple threads for reports. And it's my understanding, I'm not 100% sure of this, standard does not. Can I get you to verify that? Is that?
I don't work with that enough, no.
Okay, well, that makes two of us. Well, if he doesn't know, then...
It's grayed out on my standard.
Okay, yeah, that was my understanding, is that it only lets you do one thread. So if you're using Report Builder, you're really going to want to use Enterprise unless you're the only person publishing reports.
Yes, I have another question about the enabled white space management.
Well, the white space management has absolutely nothing to do with cross-site scripting. And so does my presentation, because that has nothing to do with performance. There is a new feature in 7. If I scroll down here right below that, enable global script protection, which does allow you to filter the 5 most common keywords that are used in cross-site scripting attacks. Now, I'm going off on a little bit of a tangent. I don't think that's very good, because basically what you're doing is you're saying, okay, here are the bad words and anything else is good. And from a security perspective, you want to typically take the reverse approach. Everything is bad except the things I explicitly allow. So I would not want to rely on that as a guarantor against cross-site scripting attacks. You're much better off using some of the publicly available regular expressions to be a lot more stringent about what kind of inputs you accept.
But I can check it out and then support the HTML format.
Yeah, there are other steps that you can take. And frankly, one approach that some people take from a security perspective as far as cross-site scripting is they simply treat all scripts, or all uploads rather, all inputs, as unsafe, even stored in the database, and then they write them out as safe strings at runtime when they're actually displaying them. Joel Spotsky wrote about that on his software blog. So that's an interesting approach. Unfortunately, from an auditing perspective, that will typically get you a red flag. Even if you're dealing with safe strings only when you output, the fact that you're accepting unsafe strings without generating an error, if you work, for example, for a government agency, the people running the scanning tools, they have a list of things that they're supposed to look for. That's on the list. They'd report that as an error even if your application's taking care of it. So from an auditing perspective, that's an issue. Okay, but enough of that stuff. That has nothing to do with this. Let me go to the next page here. Okay, another set of options that we have control over is caching. We can control how ColdFusion caches the ColdFusion pages that are run. When ColdFusion runs a page, It gets compiled into a Java class, a servlet class. ColdFusion by default will store those classes in memory and optionally on disk so that it doesn't have to go through the recompilation process. So we can go ahead and set the maximum number of cache templates. And typically, you want to figure out the total number of frequently used ColdFusion files. Now, on a very large site, you might have tens of thousands of ColdFusion files. If you attempt to cache all of those, you will consume more memory than you really want to. So you have to have some knowledge of your code base to know which code is frequently run and which code is less frequently run, and set your number to somewhere in between there. Now, the problem with that approach, of course, from a caching perspective, is that when someone does run one of these scripts that isn't used often, it will push one of the other ones out of the cache. My advice to you is to learn to live with that. Because the alternative, if you have many, many scripts, say 10,000 or more scripts, you might end up using more memory than is really necessary for this. Now, one of the things to keep in mind with this maximum number of cache templates, if I go to my caching page, the default setting is 1024, which is interesting because that was actually the default setting in CF5, and that tracked a completely different value. In CF5, it was the amount of memory allocated to caching. Here, it's the number of files that will be cached. Now, we know because of ColdFusion's own limitations that none of those files are going to be any bigger than 64K, so you can very easily do a worst-case analysis of how much memory is going to be consumed by taking that number and multiplying it by 64K. Most of your files will not be 64K. You can't write files larger than 64K because they will fail to compile. So that kind of gives you a worst-case scenario value for that. In addition, when you write a page that has functions in it, you have a CFC, that CFC has functions in it, those will actually be treated as separate files. They get compiled as separate files. So in your compiled files directory on the file system, if you go ahead and look around in there, you'll see that those are separate files. My presumption is that they're also treated as separate files for the purposes of this. I'm not sure of that 100%. Maybe Steve can enlighten me on that. Yeah. There's a lot of unknowns because nobody's really asked around about it. But my presumption would be that those do count as separate files. Now, again, if you have a system where where you have hundreds and hundreds of thousands of files, you probably will not want to try to effectively cache them either in memory or on disk because it'll take longer to traverse the cache than it will for the application just to recompile the file as needed. And one common case for this is if you're using a content management system. At FigLeaf, we do a lot of work with a product called CommonSpot from PaperThin. And when you use CommonSpot, every time you create a page, it creates a separate file for that page called a stub file. Stub file doesn't really do anything, but for the purposes of caching, it's still treated as a separate file. It's not really effective to try to cache all those stub files in memory or on disk if you have hundreds of thousands of them, which in a content management system, you very well might. Okay, next up in our hit parade, trusted cache. The trusted cache basically allows ColdFusion to not bother checking the file system to see if a file has been updated, if the file is already compiled in memory based on this cache templates number. Now, reading the file system is slow, so if we can turn that off in our production environment, we'll get a lot more performance out of the ability to cache them in memory. All this affects is in-memory caching, the trusted cache. Now, the problem again here, everything has a problem, of course. The problem here is that in a lot of production environments, people don't feel comfortable turning that on because they're making ad hoc changes to the file system. And if they're doing that, those changes will not get reflected in trusted cache. Fortunately, ColdFusion 7 allows us to basically flush the disk and memory caches so that if we find ourselves making ad hoc changes, we can at least get rid of what's in cache and have it reread from the cache. Of course, getting rid of what's in cache throws away the current advantage of the cache. You'll have to rebuild the cache for it to be effective. That typically takes some time. Our third setting is save class files. Now, this is enabled by default in ColdFusion. Let me go ahead and switch to that. Whoops. One of these days, I'll learn how to use Alt-Tab. There we go. Save class files. You'll notice that is enabled by default. Now, this works out well if you have a relatively small number of ColdFusion files. They will be cached on disk, and the files that are cached are actually the compiled Java classes. If I go ahead and take a look on my file system, let's see here. Let me go to... Oops, wrong. You'll notice if I do a directory listing, you probably can't read this very well. Let me go ahead and make it a little bigger. I always forget to make the command prompt bigger when I need to. We'll just make the font really big. You'll notice that all of my compiled files end up in this directory. They all have a class extension. You can kind of figure out the original name of the file roughly looking at it. There's actually an algorithm that will let you figure out what class file corresponds to what file in your file system. And each individual function each individual function, whether that function's in a component or just embedded into the top of the page, ends up being a separate file. So you notice here I've got a function called list find any day in list name or list no case. I didn't even write that. I don't know how that got on there. But somewhere I've got a page that has that function in it that gets compiled as a separate class. Well, the problem with this, the problem with file system caching is that all these things get put in one directory. And on most modern file systems, the more stuff you put in a directory, the harder it is for the operating system to give you back the thing you want when you go into that directory. Typically, the way people work around this is by creating hierarchies within their file systems. They create folders and subfolders, and traversing a tree on the file system is very fast and very efficient. But these are all in one directory. So in a production environment with save class files enabled, it's not uncommon to end up with a directory that has 50 or 100,000 files in it. Guess what? That's not helping you any. When ColdFusion has to find the file, it's going to actually take it longer to find the file than it would to just recompile the file. So if you have, in my opinion, if you have more than about 5,000 files, that's generally where I draw the line. Again, this will depend on the server in question and the operating system. Generally, Unix file systems tend to be a little better about this, but even on Unix, you run into issues where after you have a certain number of files in a directory, it's just really, really hard to get to. So I wouldn't, even on a big, beefy Unix box, more than 10,000 files in a directory, I'd try to avoid that.
I should uncheck that.
You should uncheck that. Yeah, that, I guess I should have summed that up in a pithy sentence. You should uncheck this if you expect that you're going to have more than 5,000 or so files. In general, that will give you better performance than leaving it checked, which is the default. Finally, right below that, we have an option called Cache Web Server Paths. This was really annoying to people when CF first came out, CF6 first came out, because it was enabled by default, and there wasn't an option to disable it in the CF administrator. Basically, what this option does is if you have a single virtual server tied to a ColdFusion server, single virtual web server tied to a ColdFusion server, this will cache the web server path in addition to the file path, and it will make it run a little more efficiently. It will be able to find files just a teensy bit faster. If you only have one virtual web server, and you don't plan on hooking any additional virtual web servers up in the future to that single ColdFusion instance, I recommend that you check that option. It will give you a little bit better performance. And in the CF administrator, that is right here, cache web server paths. I should probably make, oh, never mind. Now, another problem that a lot of times we run into is in-memory caching. I've already mentioned that a few times, but specifically in the session scopes. Usually people do not load all that much stuff in the application server scopes that it causes a problem. Although if you're running multiple applications on a machine, you certainly can run into that. But if you're caching a lot of stuff in the session scope, then you can very quickly run out of memory because everybody has their own session. So that's typically going to be a much larger memory footprint. The upshot of this is that we want sessions to expire when they're not going to be used. So, for example, in CF5 days, you would find a lot of people who would go in and they would set sessions to last for 8 hours because they didn't want to inconvenience users who left the application temporarily. I would recommend against that very, very strongly. I try to keep session timeouts very low, 20 minutes, 30 minutes if I have to, but very, very low, because that session scope is storing things in memory, and you're going to run into issues if you have lots of concurrent sessions. So make sure you set a short session timeout in the CF administrator, and make sure that you enforce that in your application.cfm or application.cfc files as well. The debugging settings page, actually, let me show the memory variables page real quick. Go to that. And on this page, we've got a maximum timeout, we've got a default timeout, and again, I'm showing the default settings here. Application variables will default, by default, will time out after 2 days. Session variables, by default, will time out after 20 minutes. And again, a lot of times people will come in here, increase this value, because they want their sessions to not inconvenience users. Yes? Well, from our perspective, performance-wise, not a whole lot. What that really is going to affect is how the session is tied to the browser. So if you enable the J2E session variables option, which generally I prefer to do, what that will do is when a user comes to your page the first time, the server will send back a single cookie to the client. That cookie will be named JSessionID. It'll have a big GUID value in it. And it will be a session cookie, so that when the user closes the browser, the cookie is automatically deleted. If I don't enable that, then ColdFusion uses the default behavior found in CF5 and earlier, which is to use two cookies, CFID and CFToken. Those cookies together have two numbers, which are treated as a unique key together. And those cookies are persistent, so the user can close their browser, reopen their browser, and their session is actually still there if it hasn't timed out on the server. But neither of those options are going to affect server timeout of sessions, so they don't really matter to us too much now. Yes?
Would it be better to up the application variables timeout to something like 99 days even, if it seems rare to want to reboot your application?
Well, yeah, keep in mind that this is going to be 2 days of inactivity. So if you have an application that people are using every day, it's not going to time out at all. And 2 days kind of takes the weekend into account for most business applications. So Monday morning, you're the first person to get to work, and you come in, and the application's dog slow because it's caching everything on that initial request. It's doing all that work. And then for the rest of the week, it runs fine. And then people go home on Friday, and then Monday you come in again, and same thing's going on. But it's inactivity. So again, we don't want to store things in memory if they're not needed. And if you're running multiple applications on a server, but nobody's actually using the application, we typically want to clear out memory because we're more concerned about memory usage now than we were with CF5. So we don't want to, we don't want to waste memory. We'd rather go back to the server. It will be more work then, but we don't have to worry about our app server keeling over, which is a good thing. And the final thing I'm going to talk about in the CF administrator, I believe, debugging settings. In CF6 and higher, if you're on a production server, please, please, for the love of all that's holy, turn off debugging. Because if you don't, it's going to gather all those statistics on every page request. This is a very expensive process. Now, I know what I used to do with CF5. I would leave debugging enabled all the time, and I would simply remove all the IP addresses except for the console IP address. That was very convenient for me because I could just go in the console and run pages. Well, it turns out that that seems to have much more of an impact with CF6 and higher, to the extent that it'll slow the whole server down even if nobody's looking at the debug output. Also, on some versions of CF6 and higher, there have been memory leaks where if you're running debugging, the server just keels over, even if nobody's using it. And that's kind of wacky. And we don't.
6.1.
Okay. Nevertheless, I'm still going to turn it off. Yes. Well, it's gathering the statistics whether it's showing the output or not. It's basically sitting there typing all these numbers into its own little calculator of sorts. Whether it shows them or not is a different thing. And, of course, the expense is not just the showing, although that is expensive because you're drawing out a lot more of your page. But it's expensive to actually keep track of all the metrics as well. So, yeah, turn it off. Steve says that that it's fixed. I'm going to take his word for it. The memory leak issue is fixed, but it's still going to be expensive to gather that stuff if you don't need it. So you one extra step. You have to go into the server, enable debugging when you need it, do what you need to do, turn it off. Now, one thing, sort of on a little bit of a tangent, one thing that I used to do with CF5 is I would use load testing, and I would leave debugging on, but I would just view it in one page with one IP address, and the load testing virtual clients would hit it from other IP addresses. That's going to really skew your statistics if you do that with CF6 and higher, because again, every page request is going to be a lot more expensive with that debug output. Someone else who? Yes?
Can you re-enable debugging on the fly, or does it require server?
You can re-enable it on the fly, and in fact, there's you can do it programmatically through the admin API in 7. So you can write a script that basically turns it on, gathers some statistics, turns it off. But ideally, we want to avoid doing it in production for obvious reasons. Okay, let's talk a little bit about Java Virtual Machines. Java Virtual Machine, of course, is the core of Cold Fusion at this point. It's the engine that makes it go. No JVM, no Cold Fusion. So this is running all of our code. It runs the classes that we write. When we write a CFM, it gets compiled to a Java class. It also runs the Cold Fusion functionality that creates that Java class. So it really is a fundamental core to Cold Fusion. Now, by default, when you install Cold Fusion, it installs, nowadays, the JVM I've got listed on the screen, 142.0.5. Now, this JVM is, how should I say it without insulting Stephen? Very, very old. It's an old JVM. It's so old that if you go to the Java site, java.sun.com, and just start clicking around, they won't list it because they don't want you to use it anymore. Now, Cold Fusion is very, very complicated, so it's not like they can just switch in and out JVMs. Each one requires a lot of testing to go through Macromedia's or nowadays Adobe's requirements to get supported. But basically, all of the supported JVMs for Cold Fusion are quite old, quite out of date. Well, of course, Sun is constantly finding ways to make the JVM perform better and things like that. So being able to update our JVM can conceivably buy us a lot better performance. Now, the latest JVMs that are available are the 1.5 JVMs, and that's what you'd actually get if you just went to java.sun.com. This is not supported, obviously, by Cold Fusion. It is supported by JRun as of updater 6, I believe, but is not supported by Cold Fusion. It will almost certainly break things. However, I do know a couple of people who are testing this out to see if they can live with what gets broken. So there are some features of Cold Fusion that you might not be using. If you're not using them and this breaks them, then it might be worth the cost to switch to it. Obviously, you would need to thoroughly test everything in your application if you're going to do this. However, I know some people who are going that route to see how well that works in a production environment. It will break some features of CF. There are some known things that it will break. My experience is that it will break CF LDAP, Axis, and some parts of Verity integration. There are probably other things as well. I just haven't found them yet. And someone else might have found them. But again, you might consider that, but obviously you will want to be very, very careful. The 1.5 JVMs, according to my understanding, provide significantly better memory management and garbage collection, which basically is clearing things out of memory that are no longer in use. And of course, that's a big thing, given our memory management limitations. Well, even if you're not willing to take such a radical shift, you can upgrade your JVM from the default safely. The latest supported version of the JVM for Cold Fusion is the Sun JVM 142_09. I believe the latest one in the 142 series is _11, although they might have changed that. And I've had breakage issues with CFLDAP with unsupported 142 JVM, so you'll want to be a little bit careful of that. But 142.09 is supported and does actually fix some significant issues that existed in previous JVMs. Now, if you just root around on the Java site, the Sun Java site, you won't find this very easily. So I've gone ahead and put the URL in here, java.sun.com/products/archive/index.html. And if you're trying to write that down, you can get it online. At the end of the presentation, there's a link where you can go right now to view the presentation online, and all the URLs are in there. Now, in addition to upgrading the JVM itself, we can edit JVM settings. We can do this various ways, depending on how we installed Cold Fusion and how lucky we feel. No matter how you install Cold Fusion, there is a GUI for managing the JVM configuration. If you install Cold Fusion in standalone mode, standalone server configuration, it's available within the CF administrator. If you install it in multi-server configuration on top of JRun, it's available through the JRun admin console. My recommendation is that you not use either of those to edit your JVM.config, because there are known issues with both, where they will break your configuration. And unfortunately, if you break this, you won't be able to start Cold Fusion again. You won't be able to edit the file through the GUI to fix it, because you won't be able to start. Well, anyway, your best choice is to use something like Notepad or VI to edit the file. Now, first you have to find the file. And nowadays, I can barely remember where things are located. So what I do typically is I just switch to the directory where Cold Fusion lives and have it do a recursive search through subdirectories. And I'm running multi-server version on my laptop, the developer multi-server version. And so my JVM.config is in JRun4/bin. And let me go ahead and, before I open it up, if I were going to change it, I would typically want to back it up first. So I just, before I do anything with the file, I'll copy it in the same directory, give it a name with a date stamp in it so I know when that was, and then I'll go ahead and open it up. And then I'll make the font size bigger in Notepad. Like so. Now, if you take a look at this, you'll notice that by default, I'm running the Java virtual machine that comes with Cold Fusion, comes with JRun, and it's planted in the JRun4 directory in my case. If you were going to change this, you would have to install the JVM typically outside of your Cold Fusion or JRun directories, and you'd have to change this path to point to that location. This is listed in the product documentation now, I believe, so it's actually pretty easy to do. One little minor hitch, when you download the JVM, you will need to download the server version of the JVM, which typically is bundled with the development tools. So it won't be just the Java runtime, the JRE. You'll need to download the Java runtime SDK. That's how it'll be listed, is the SDK, which is much larger. And you're really just doing this so you get one DLL that the other package doesn't have. I'll leave that open for a second. Now, you might end up coming in here to change some configuration options in the JVM itself. Now, unfortunately, I haven't arrived at the point in my life where I can say, here's the optimal set of JVM settings for everyone. Just go home and take these home. This always, in my experience, has required a significant amount of trial and error. However, I can tell you some things that I've run into. One is that setting the initial heap size, while it is generally recommended in most documentation that you'll read, on Windows, apparently that causes the JVM to be quite unhappy. So typically, I leave the initial heap size set to zero. And that's actually available as a field in the CF administrator. If you have that version, it listed as a separate field. But in our JVM.config file, you'll notice I actually don't have it. It would be dash XMS and then whatever value. Now, this is actually the default set of arguments. I haven't changed this at all. And this is the key part that you would be changing if you want to affect the frequency of garbage collection. If you are going to edit this, the one thing that I always forget and then regret forgetting is that the server argument always has to come first. Otherwise, it won't start. This is what tells it to use the server DLL instead of the regular DLL. All of these settings are documented, and I'm going to go ahead and point you to the documentation for them. In general, the ones that I've found most useful to play with are the ones that affect how garbage collection is performed. We can have garbage collection run in parallel. We can disable that. The size of the heap, which right now on my machine is set to half a gig. So, for example, I might change this to 1024. And those have been the big things that I've found to be somewhat useful. Again, a lot of this really requires testing to see if it works in your environment. Unfortunately, at this point when you're doing this, usually the testing that you're doing is on a production server. And you're trying to find the test that will allow it not to crash. Now, there are a lot of good resources out there for tuning the JVM. Probably the one that I've found most useful is the very first one in this list, which lists the garbage collection options and gives a little bit of guidance about how to go ahead and read those. And I think I have an internet connection here, so let me go ahead and click on that. Well, you go ahead and ask a dumb guy. What's that? I don't have an answer for that. Do you know, Stephen? Okay. That's the way it is in JRON. In fact, that is the JRON configuration file, whether you're running Cold Fusion or not. And you can install JRON without Cold Fusion, have multiple instances, some having Cold Fusion, some not. And by default, they'll all use that same JVM.config. One thing that you can do if you're running multiple instances of ColdFusion or multiple separate copies of JRON is actually configure each one to use its own JVM.config file. And that is documented as a tech note on the Macromedia site. Okay, so here I am. I have a very slow internet connection because it's coming through my phone. The stuff that I've found most useful really is this little section about sizing the generations, setting the permanent generation, setting the young generation. To be honest, I don't even really know what the heck that stuff means, except that garbage collection is spawned at various times, and you can basically control how frequently it runs and what kind of objects are stored where. I'm not a Java server administrator by nature, so... I have found that useful as far as listing the arguments and listing general performance strategies for when you would want to use which arguments. And a certain amount of this is going to be application specific. Now, there are also lots of people who have blogged about various things, including our very own Steve Erott in the back of the room, who's been my back pocket expert for today. The three that I found most useful, and they're not really organized all that well just because blogging software is kind of like that. Things are sequential, and the categories are kind of generic. So you might end up reading a decent amount of stuff. But those three resources I found to be pretty useful as far as explaining what some of this stuff means. So Roby's, for example, Roby Sen's blog has some description of what permanent generation versus young generation means and some general tuning strategies that might be useful to you. And Steve Erott's blog just has all kinds of general purpose stuff, especially if you're running in a Unix environment. Since I do very little work on Unix boxes, I end up, every time I have a client who's using Unix, I end up spending a lot of time on his site. Now, if you're using a version of ColdFusion prior to 7, there are going to be some specific issues with that, with 6.1. One is that you typically have to manually configure scheduler and proxy services in JRun. And there's a little tech note, which I've bookmarked here, which talks about that. If you're using 7, this is unnecessary. You don't have to worry about it. If you're using 6.1, there are many, many patches and database drivers and all kinds of other good stuff available. There is a ColdFusion hotfixes page, which lists all the hotfixes for all the versions of ColdFusion. It's available right off of support/ColdFusion. It's very easy to find there. One little thing that people slip up on with those hotfixes is the database drivers. Macromedia, or rather Adobe's database drivers, the ones they use in ColdFusion, are actually provided by a third-party vendor named DataDirect. Presumably, these are supposed to be the best database drivers on the market, and they're bundled with ColdFusion. These are frequently revised. So typically, when there is a revision, the ColdFusion guys will get their hands on it. They'll make sure everything works by running it through their QA suite. They'll put it in the bug fixes list. If you're using 6.1, you can use the database drivers that are listed under 7. And a lot of people don't realize that, so they can go ahead and download those under the 7 hotfixes, the latest version of the DataDirect drivers. Very easy to install. It's just a jar file. You just back up the first jar file, drop this in, cycle the server, and you're good. And again, these things do get revised typically every 3 to 4 months. So you will want to keep an eye on that. Database drivers, for me, have been kind of a touchy issue because there have been lots of bugs and issues with the DataDirect drivers. But finally, what you probably want to do is just upgrade to 7. For most of you, that is probably a free or at least cheap upgrade from 6.1 to 7 if you have a subscription or anything like that. And the way I look at 7, there's some new features which are nifty from a programmer's perspective, but primarily it's just a gigantic bug fix. It adds a lot of performance and stability improvements to 6. And it's a pretty safe upgrade from 6. So if you're running 6 now and it's working marginally well, you typically get better performance out of 7. You won't have to really go through the serious regressive test suite that you would from 5 to 6. Or you really have to test every last thing out. Specific issues with database drivers. ColdFusion 6 and higher uses JDBC versus ODBC or native drivers. And typically this has been a bit of a problem for a lot of people. The database drivers that come with ColdFusion may or may not work in your situation. And again, they are frequently revised to deal with problems. I still run into a decent number of people who are using ODBC with their CFMX applications because they might have had an existing, typically with Oracle for some reason, most often, they've had an existing Oracle ODBC set up and they just point ColdFusion to that. Unfortunately, that tends to be very poorly performing. So if possible, use JDBC drivers, pure Java Type 4 JDBC drivers. The DataDirect drivers that you get are all Type 4, pure JDBC. There's no other database layers, no other abstraction layers. Now, in addition to the drivers that come with CF, you can install third-party drivers. You can install drivers from the database vendor. And for some specific issues, primarily with Oracle, you might get better results with Oracle's own JDBC drivers. These tend to be relatively edge case type of issues, and usually, the DataDirect drivers are going to work better for you with Oracle, in my experience. But there are some edge cases where the Oracle drivers will work better. Oracle offers two different types of JDBC drivers. They're free to download if you have an Oracle server. They have a pure JDBC driver, and they have a JDBC OCI driver, which is type 3, I believe, type 2 or type 3. So you might try all of those. And, of course, if you don't have Cold Fusion Enterprise, you don't have any Oracle drivers at all. So you will want to use the Oracle drivers available from Oracle. You want to download the JDBC drivers. Finally, there's other third-party drivers out there. DataDirect, of course, is what we're using in Cold Fusion. There have been some rare cases where DataDirect actually fixes a bug before it gets put into the Cold Fusion available DataDirect drivers. So I've actually had some clients where they've actually gone out and bought the drivers directly from DataDirect. Well, that's very expensive. It's about $4,000 or so. Usually, you're better off just upgrading to Enterprise if you don't have, for example, Oracle drivers. But for some kind of edge case bug fixes, people have gone directly to DataDirect to get their drivers. New Atlanta offers a JDBC driver that's very well respected called JTurbo. In my relatively limited experience with it, it seems to work very well under load. That is also a retail product that runs about $800, I think. But New Atlanta has a booth at the show, so if you're using SQL Server, it's SQL Server only, you can go talk to them. And, of course, Microsoft has their own SQL Server drivers, which support 2000 and 2005. Now, Cold Fusion provides information about how it's running. We can get real-time aggregate information across the entire server. Two different ways we can do this. We have a command line tool called CFStat, which is available if we're running CF in a standalone server configuration. Or we have JRun Metrics, which basically reports the same data through JRun. If we're running a multi-server configuration, we'll have to use that approach. To use CFStat, all you really have to do is go to the directory that it's in, type CFStat, a number, and it'll display the metrics that you want to show. Now, it is aggregate information. It doesn't really show you what's going on in an individual page. So, in general, if you're doing load testing, running things like CFStat or JRun Metrics are useful to get a feel of how the whole server's doing, but they're not going to really tell you page such and such is, you know, spending a really long time on database queries. Now, for that kind of stuff, we're all very lucky people, because a year ago, we would have been looking at stack traces and things like that, and that would be ugly. But nowadays, there's actually a very vibrant market, third-party tools. The two tools that I've worked with are CFusion and Fusion Reactor. Both of these are available, and they're about in the $300 or $400 range for the top-tier version, the enterprise version. Both of them, in my opinion, are worth the money. Buy one or the other. You don't need both of them. But both of them are very well-made tools. Personally, I prefer CFusion, but I think that's more a matter of my personal preferences than a necessary superiority in the product. The nice thing about these is that they actually give you per-page metrics. They let you see what's going on in an individual page, and while monitoring the server, they'll actually, in some cases, let you kill a process if you're actually doing real-time monitoring. Both of these guys are located here at the show. They both have booths. You should check them both out. They do have evaluation versions, 30-day evals that you can download and try out, and I found these things to be just wonderful, wonderful tools. I don't have any more time to talk about them, so I'm going to just say, go check out their booths, because they're very good. Finally, within our code, we can measure performance. If typically in a load testing environment, you identify long-running pages, slow pages. Once you've identified that long-running page, you have to figure out what's going on within the page. And in Cold Fusion, we have two code-based approaches for doing that. We have a tag called CFTimer, which is new to CF7. And prior to that, we have a function called getTickCount, which has been around since CF4 or so. Both of these allow us to find how many milliseconds an isolated segment of code takes to run. So if you have a very long, complicated script, you can break it down into quarters or thirds, find out how long each one is taking to run. Okay, now this is really meant to be an introduction to all these server management topics. Obviously, with more time, I could go into a lot more depth on all of them. But you guys have lives to live, so we don't want to do that. This presentation is available online right now at the URL. So if you're going to write down any URLs, this is the one you want to write down, figleaf.mmalliance.recentral.com/CFMXCONF01. This presentation is there right now. It's a breezo. Unfortunately, there's no audio track yet because my microphone is broken. But I'll record an audio track and add it to that. But if you go to that URL right now, the presentation's there. Yes? There are actually ways in code that you can basically find out how many objects you have in memory, things like that. One nice thing about the monitoring tools I mentioned, CFusion and Fusion Reactor, is that they will give you decent reports. Basically, most of us organize our applications using some sort of directory structure. So you can say, okay, everything in /app1. Well, if anything is in there that's running, I can look at that and get a pretty quick gauge of how much is being consumed. Any other questions? I'll be available outside for questions. I got to let the next guy in here. Otherwise, this nice lady at the door is going to kill me. Oh, and thank you. Oh.
Thank you for listening, and we hope we will see you at CF United 2007. This has been a production by TerraTech Programming. For more information, go to www.cfunited.com.